Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Layup Lines podcast. I'm Michael Chapman, joined as always by Seth Horton. And joining us today, a special guest. He was a former state archery champion in the state of Tennessee, my former teammate, Joel Holland. Joel, it's good to have you here.
Yeah, man. Good to be here. And just to be honest with you, I think badminton was probably my strongest sport of my past. Like, I did the whole archery thing. I let the bow go and stuff like that, but I feel like there were other guys, stronger guys on the team that are responsible for that tournament. And full disclosure for all our listeners, I can't hear my voice right now. There's something particularly disturbing about the padding in this room. As soon as Michael turned on the recording thingy thing, I just couldn't hear myself. So if I sound a little bit slurred or anything at any point, just go ahead and blame that for me. Yeah. But yeah, it's good to be here.
That's fair.
Appreciate it, Joel.
It's good to have an actual sports expert on the
pod
today.
Yeah, I mean, Joel's probably the biggest sport expert we know.
I mean,
he knows way more about it than me or Seth do.
I am credibility personified.
Yeah. So it should be a fun podcast. But so the format for today, guys, is we're just going to talk about some really obscure sports that nobody's ever heard of.
Let's go.
I'm just going to name the sport. Seth and Joel are going to be competing, and they're each going to give their explanation of the sport, and the winner of each round, solely by my judgment, it can be the best answer, it can be the closest answer, whatever. The winner of each round gets 1 point added onto their score. I can award bonus points if I want to.
Oh, fabulous.
So, yeah. Yeah, so that's how this is.
I know how to win this, but I'm going to refrain unless I find myself in a hole.
All right. So, the first sport I'm going to talk to you guys about is Boteyoshi.
Say that one more time.
Boteyoshi. It's Japanese. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Who wants to go first?
It's really up to you. I mean, I know what it is, so if you want to go ahead and go first and just get all
Seth's
your theories
gonna
out of the way.
Yeah, Seth's going to go first round, and then we'll alternate.
So you said it's Boteyoshi?
Yes.
So I'm going to assume it's trying to get a Yoshi, pin it down, and tie a bow tie onto its neck.
Very, very close, actually. That's the closest answer I've gotten so far. Joel, what's your explanation?
So I'm going to give you a little bit of grace here, but you actually pronounced it a little bit off the last vowel there. There's a little bit more inflection, but it's fine. It's fine. This sport in particular is one of the few that is not featured on Fields of Green, and so it's more of like a dusty atmosphere, grimy, sort of down and dirty sort of thing. And you don't have particular people with different roles. It's more of a jack of all trades, every man for himself sort of thing. And so with this particular sport, I mean, you can really just jump into it and have a good time, like, with your buddies. And this was an early bonding form for many Japanese, especially. I will not take outside sources because I know what it is. So from the fourth party here that will remain nameless for the rest of the show, please step down and proceed to the back of the room. But anyway, that's in a nutshell what I proceed is that. And I think, did I get into the whole cultural thing yet?
Or not? A little bit. You talked about how a lot of people grew up playing the sport and really bonded in Japan.
Yeah, and it's something that most people had that sort of common interest in. And so if someone came from out of town, maybe a distant relative that they didn't really know, after a nice meal, they would all go out and they would, you know, just play
just
around.
Play.
So
Yeah,
you're exactly right, Joel. I'll explain to you guys the rules. Joel got all of the cultural stuff exactly right. So he's going to get 1 point for this. But Boteyoshi is Japanese for pull-down. And this is a game where there's 150 players on each side. 75 attackers, 75 defenders. And your entire goal is to pull the other team's 20-foot pole down.
I do know that, actually.
Well, I didn't know that's what didn't it was called. Know it
when, I didn't know that's what it was called. But I do know that actual sport.
That's what I told my professor a couple tests ago, that I did know it. I just didn't write it down at the time of the test, and I didn't get any points for that.
Yeah, I did get points for that because it was Dr. Ward, and Dr. Ward's the most gracious professor in the world.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean,
what a sweet man.
I'm not as gracious as Dr. Ward, Seth. I'm sorry. So you get no points for that. Next time you try that bullcrap, though, I'm going to have to take away a point.
Right. So remind me, chap, are the roles not interchangeable? Or are they usually set, like you're just offensive or defensive?
I mean, players play multiple roles. Usually for one game, though, you're either attacking or defending.
Okay. I was about to say, like, even when you watch some games, it doesn't seem like a lot of players have a designated role. They just kind of jump back and forth trying to help out the pole. So,
you're right.
They're just playing sloppily, but that's
fine. You're right.
You're correct.
Because when a team gets close to knocking a pole down, some of the other team's attackers have to come help.
They jump into defensive mode.
Yeah, okay, you're right, Joel. You're right. I appreciate you being on this, Joel, because, I mean, we wouldn't have had nearly as clear an explanation without you here. So, props to you. So, the next one...
This is not going to go well for me.
The next sport that I want to get into is Octopush.
Mm.
Ooh.
Joel goes first this round.
I go first this round. Okay, so...
Snake draft.
Unlike the last one, this does involve a spherical object, not so much threaded on the outside, but it is spherical, and it involves... a specific shape, and I'm actually less familiar with this one, to be honest. I'm trying to pull back from memories of middle school, because I did have a friend, Tony, I want to say his name's Robinson, but I think I might just be thinking of Tony Robinson, so it's probably not his full name. Tony, if you're out there, I apologize, but he was a pro at this game, and he would always try to get me to play, and I never actually played. This is one of those sports that I just never played, but he stood inside a shape.
One of the few.
And I think it involved a ball. They would push it around from within the shape, and it would have to hit a specific spot or something like that on the ground, and if it went out of the perimeter, then they would lose points. I could be off on this, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
You're very, very close. I want to give Seth an opportunity to answer as well.
So do I want to lose points or gain points here?
Go for the points, man.
Go for the points? Okay.
I would like to be further educated on this person.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna withhold my trump card. And I'm going to actually try.
Let's leave him out of this.
I'm going to assume it's called Octopush.
Yes.
I'm going to assume that you get 7 people ganging up on one guy, and they just beat the crap out of him for 30 minutes.
Completely wrong, Seth.
Gosh,
you're doing really bad right now. Joel's explanation was actually really, really close. The shape that Joel was thinking of, and obviously he hasn't been in contact with this sport since middle school, so that's the reason Joel couldn't remember all of the details.
That's the reason.
Yeah. The shape that Joel was thinking of was actually just a pool. It's just underwater hockey.
Oh,
Joel was right. You get it to one specific spot on the court. It's not a sphere per se, it's a puck shape, but
okay.
you were very, very close, just some minor details off. So that's obviously another point for Joel.
But one might say, if I was spinning underwater multiple times and I was a little discombobulated, if I had looked at it from like through the water, underneath the water, it would definitely look like a sphere shape.
Oh no,
just watching
when you watch when you watch them play, I'm sure it did look like a sphere shape, because underwater everything gets distorted. So,
yeah. No, yeah. It was enlarged and things like this. So
I hate both of you.
Yeah, no, you're right, Joel. You are correct.
Hate the player, love the sport. I will take the hate for the sake of the sport.
All
right. Keep on hating, Seth. Keep on hating.
So, the next thing I want to talk to you guys about is, I'm just going to say the name of the major league that exists.
Mm. Okay.
It's because saying the name of the sport would kind of give it away. The CTFL.
Okay, yeah.
The CTFL?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seth goes first.
This could be way off, but I'm assuming the Canadian Transsexual Football League. I could be way off, but that's my assumption. And if I'm right, it's a football league in Canada for transsexuals. Generally, you have like all the regular football rules, but instead of like tackling, you do two-hand touch, and if someone does get tackled, they blow their rape whistle.
All right, good answer, Seth. Joel.
Yeah, so this sport is strictly European, and so think of European derivatives and things of this nature, and we try our best. We've had a few recreations of this league in our own. You know, we kick our balls around, things like this, but Europe's just better at sports than we are, and so I'm not going to offer any more explanation than we deserve because we don't deserve this sport, and that's why the leagues are in the European area. I'm pretty sure it's European. Could be wrong on that. Don't think I am because I know a lot about sports, but that's the only info I'm going to give you, chap. It's European.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Joel. It is European, and we have tried to emulate it, especially as kids. You know when you go to the backyard and you just get the giant cardboard tubes and just whack each other with them?
Oh, yeah.
No.
When you're a kid? So that's what this is. It's the cardboard tube fighting league.
What did you do when you were a kid?
He just told you, man.
I have never heard of that in my life.
Yeah, so, and to be fair, there are a couple of teams in the U.S., but it is mostly based in Australia.
Okay.
So,
which is technically part of Europe.
Yeah, my buddy's currently living in Australia, and he's thinking about getting more into it. He's played around with it, and he's like a big guy, so he's pretty effective when he plays, and it makes for, I don't know, not a great time for a lot of people. Like, he's one of those people where they know he's always down to play, but they don't necessarily want to play with him. Yeah. He's also into Vegemite
these
days.
Don't want to play with him or against him?
Either one. Like, when he wins, they just kind of feel bad because it's, like, just brute force. And,
yeah.
I mean, the pictures always come out great, but the bruises not so much. He's also into Vegemite now, so I don't know if he can be trusted, but he says it's a really fun game. And I can remember, obviously, like Chap said, you know, 6th, 7th grade even playing, but then once I got more into middle school, closer to high school, stuff like that, I just stopped finding the game enjoyable.
Yeah, no, you're right. This is the most sissy game that I've ever heard of, by the way. This is cardboard tubes.
Yeah, yeah.
This is cardboard tubes. There's no stabbing allowed. That's rule number one.
Okay.
You can't, like, jab with your puny little cardboard
tube.
These
are the exact rules that they gave me after Christmases when I wasn't satisfied with the gifts I got. And I was just, like,
no stabbing?
Running around with cardboard. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
Just, like,
okay.
No.
Yeah, you had cardboard with you. Okay.
No stabbing.
Yeah. I thought it was just in general, if you didn't like your present, you're not allowed to stab people.
You can't hit people on the head. That was another one of your rules.
Yeah.
Concussion.
Over Christmas.
Yeah.
Concussions. It's a big deal.
Via
they're trying to avoid
cardboard tubes. You're right.
Yeah.
They know about CTE more than the NFL does.
Amen. NFL.
Australia is just more advanced than we are.
Remind us, Chap, what those abbreviations stood for.
The CTFL stands for the Cardboard Tube Fighting League.
Okay. That's pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and so the only way that you win is you break the other person's cardboard tube. So that's why your friend Ethan, right?
Yeah.
That's why your friend Ethan is so good at the game, because he's so big and he just gets leverage and is able to break the other guy's
tube. Just sheer momentum of the swing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got usually, it. Like, he'll break a shoulder or two on the other guy.
Absolutely. All right. The next sport I want to get into, chess boxing.
Yeah.
Wait, chess or chest?
Chess. Chess boxing.
Chess boxing.
I think it's Joel's turn to go first, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. It's Joel's up 3-0, by the way.
Yeah.
So, chess boxing. Have you guys seen Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes movie?
I don't think I have, actually.
Okay, well, there's this...
You should go to the A&E podcast and talk about that.
Yeah, the Robert Downey Jr. one. There's a great scene near the beginning of the first one where he's...
The boxing scene?
Yeah, he's sort of shadow boxing, things of this nature, slow motion scenes. And then there's this great scene in the second one where he's playing chess with Moriarty. It's sort of their final standoff by the waterfall. And I think Guy Ritchie was really doing something beautiful here with both of these films in explaining the intricacies of chess boxing with both of these movies without actually getting into the sport itself. And so you'll find a lot of similarities here as far as just the strength that it takes, but also the strategy. And so, yeah, I would just recommend checking both of those movies out. And in a sort of roundabout, subtle, not so subtle way, I think you'll learn a lot more about chess boxing.
Thank you, Joel. That was very insightful.
All right, so I'm just going to take a stab in the dark here. Is it chess but with Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
Seth, you're doing really bad. Joel was right on. It is chess combined with boxing. Joel even had the
Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movies, man.
Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movies. That was impressive.
Check them
Joel.
Out.
All right, I'm going to have to pull out my trump card next time.
Let's leave him out of this.
Yeah, so This game, though, it's 11 rounds. The first one is chess, and then you alternate between chess and boxing each round. You win. Each round is 3 minutes long, so each player gets 9 minutes at the chessboard. So you win by either getting an opponent in checkmate, knocking the opponent out, or your opponent running out of time on the chessboard.
That's some good stuff. And if you go back and watch the second one and you actually time for screen time how much time they're actually sitting there playing chess, it's about 3 minutes. And there was one scene where Robert Downey Jr. took a long time in making one of his moves because he wanted to portray sort of this thoughtfulness, and they had to refilm it just to make sure the time lined up. And so I really appreciated the director's vision for that and just his wanting to stay accurate to the sport, because not enough people recognize what the sport is, and I think it should be talked about more.
No, absolutely. And you were right on. You were right on with the strength combined with strategy that Guy Ritchie explained in that film. So I appreciate it, Joel.
I'm glad somebody does.
Can you move on? You can't see it right now, but I'm just staring daggers into Joel's soul.
It doesn't help that I can't hear my voice, because I don't have a confidence that someone outside of this room could hear my voice if I was indeed approached by an angry ginger.
Moving on.
Moving on. All right, the next sport I want to get into is ferret legging.
Ferret legging.
Ferret legging.
All right, my immediate thought is wearing ferrets as leggings, but I'm not going to go that route.
It's actually very close, Seth. That might be your best answer yet.
I'm going to guess you have to wrangle a ferret or two, skin the ferret, and wear the ferret as pants. Or you can get points by just straight up sticking your foot in the mouth of a ferret and hoping you survive.
Very, very close, actually. That's your best answer yet by far, Seth. Joel?
There was a game in 92, I know, where Rob Spree, Google this name when you get home, ladies and gentlemen, children, whoever may be listening, but he actually got so aggravated by the ending and the turnabout of the game that he just ate one of the ferrets involved. And the refs, everybody was just so terrified of this happenstance, this situation, that they just gave him the win. So, I mean, Seth, you talked about getting bonus points from this whole ferret absorption thing. And, I mean, somebody did. Rob Spree, I'd look it up, 92. As far as the game itself, think snail racing, but just more fun to watch. I mean, we don't have time for that. We don't have time to sit around and watch snail racing. Also, whenever I'm watching the snails, I just feel like I want to get more involved. Like, why am I not there with them? And so I think this game kind of helps both of these problems. Side note, just because I love sports so much, and you guys know how much I love sharing sports stories, my cousin Ben, great runner, he runs all the time. He's just running around all the time. He won first place in something, a marathon something, and his last name's Farrell, and they accidentally messed up his name on the trophy, and so to this day, he has a trophy on his dresser, and it says Ben Ferret. And so I just think God has really funny ways of humbling us, and he's proud of winning, but he's not proud of that trophy. So anyway, I know I'm a little bit over my time, but there's just so much that comes to mind when I think of this game.
Actually, I'm going to have to give the point to Seth on this one.
Yes!
Seth was a little bit closer.
Suck it.
Strange.
Yeah, you just didn't get into the specifics this time, Joel, like you had in the previous four. But
minus Robert Spree.
I mean, I thought I gave specifics.
Yeah, the Robert Spree thing was interesting, but you didn't get into the actual rules. That's besides fair. The eating of the ferrets, which Seth also mentioned.
Yeah, but that is true.
So how this game works is sans underwear. You put two ferrets down your pants, and you try to hold them there for as long as you can.
Oh, yeah.
So, the world record is 5 hours.
Is this gentleman still with us today?
No, he actually died. That was actually in the same match as, who was it, Robert Spree?
Yeah.
Back
in 92. Yeah, it was the most legendary ferret-legging match of all time.
Okay. I was wondering about that. And that's something that I did
two more.
I did wish that I had touched on more is that, you know, like I said, when you're watching the snail races and you're what's, going, I wish I could, score? I wish I could be a part of this,
so
you know?
I can't win.
And
no,
so
I can award bonus I need points bonus whenever points. I want
with the ferret game, I mean, points. Not only are you a part of the game, but they're a part of you, and you're putting them down your pants, and you're just having a grand old time. You and the ferrets.
I appreciate it, Joel. All right.
So do the ferrets.
All right.
I'm going to hit you with a bus.
This next one, this is one of my personal favorite extreme sports. Extreme ironing.
Extreme who's irony or ironing?
Ironing. Whose turn is it to go first? It's Joel's turn. So have at it, Joel.
I am not very familiar with this one, and in fact, it doesn't seem to be giving off a lot of sports vibes. Extreme ironing. I think back to times growing up, playing the SNES, having my mom iron my clothes for me right before school. You know, I'd just hop on the old school bus, I'd get beaten up, they'd take my peanut butter and jelly, and, you know, Sarah would split her Oreos with me, and that's just how I would get through the day. And so, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little emotional over here, but as far as my guess for the sport, I would just say...
All right, you're done. Okay.
Joel. No, I want to hear this, Seth.
Shut up.
Okay, Joel's just too emotional to respond.
We're moving on.
I'm going to have pity on him here in the judging in a second.
Oh, my gosh. You freaking little... Oh, I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to... You know what? Extreme ironing. Do I play my trump?
Let's leave him out of this.
We have one more after this?
Yeah, one more after this.
Can you tell me what the next one is so I know whether or not to use my trump card now or later?
Nope.
All right. Extreme ironing is when Vanderbilt football wrecks a team so bad that they can no longer continue to be a football team. And Vanderbilt goes on to win the next decade of championships in the college football playoffs.
You know, that's a good answer for any sport that's not lame. But that's actually the best sport, and this is the lamest sport. So I'm going to have to give the points to Joel.
God.
What are you saying about my mom? I mean, what are the implications there?
What? So, extreme ironing... the introduction to this is simply extreme sport or performance art, and I would argue that it is more of a performance art. What Seth described was a sport. Joel described closer to a performance art, so I'm going to have to give the points to Joel. I'm actually going to give him 2 points for this one.
I appreciate it, chap. And I know that Sarah does too, and so does my mom. And
yeah, so I appreciate that, Joel. But... So basically, extreme ironing is you just go to some weird place and just iron. You can do it on a surfboard. You can do it. The picture I'm looking at, this person's like hanging from a mountain, and the ironing board's on like a rock on a waterfall.
This does explain why Joel wasn't People very familiar it with it, because it's more of a performance art.
No, I mean, he wasn't familiar with it either. I'm just saying.
No, I'm saying that's why he wasn't very familiar with it. Because of a performance.
Oh, yeah.
Can I ask, do you happen to know if this or planking came first?
This or what?
Planking.
I would guess planking came first.
Okay. This does seem derived from that.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right, Joel. This is almost certainly derivative of planking.
What's the last one? Is it soccer? I swear if it's soccer.
Hey, I was on a soccer team.
Same.
Somebody busted up my nose one time during a game. It was bleeding real bad.
I got kicked in the face.
Turf and surf, baby. Turf and surf.
All right, so the last sport I want to talk about here is cheese rolling.
You know, chap, is it Seth's turn to answer?
Yeah, it's Seth's turn to answer first.
Okay.
I appreciate your eagerness, Joel. I know you've got a lot to talk about with this sport, with your history with it.
I do.
But we'll let Seth go first.
What I like to do with this sport, whenever I play, I like to lather myself in mayonnaise and just dive into the cheese You roll all in it. And sometimes it's different kinds of cheese. It can be Parmesan, maybe cheddar. Sometimes, you know, whatever.
What?
What? You said it was cheese rolling, right?
Yeah, it's that's the name of the sport. You continue.
Am I already wrong?
Yes, do continue.
Oh, you're
please.
Very, very wrong. I'm interested in this though because this might be the most wrong answer I've ever heard.
I'm excited because I've heard talk of mayonnaise, but you still haven't mentioned corn. And for that alone, I'd give you half a point. We'll see where this is going. I'm very excited to see. Just between you and me.
Here's the thing. What you do is for guys, you're typically in a Speedo, and you lather yourself in mayonnaise, and you dive.
There it is again, another half point for the mayonnaise.
You dive into this large, like almost like a swimming pool container of different varieties of cheeses.
A container of swimming pools.
Yeah, it's a container of swimming pools with cheeses in them. And these cheeses, they're like the little square cheeses. It's not like full things because like that's expensive. So there's like provolone and Swiss and, you know, cheddar and, you know, what have you, mozzarella, some monster, I believe. Is that how it's pronounced?
I believe it's pronounced Munster.
Okay, Munster. All right.
Yeah, little grime in the throat.
They
there.
Have also on the top layer of these cheeses is some like cheese dust from like Cheetos. And so you roll around in that, lathered in mayonnaise so it'll stick to you. And then what happens is you have to have like this sumo suit-esque outer layer of cheese. You step out of the pool or container and you get onto a scale and it weighs your weight with the cheese and they subtract your weight to see how much cheese in tons you have gathered on your body. And then, see, at that point, there's so much cheese on you that, like, you're totally coated in cheese, and you have to eat your way free. And whoever manages to eat their way free from this bodysuit of cheeses with the most cheese is declared the winner and then taken immediately to a hospital because no human is supposed to consume that amount of cheese. Okay. So this is always played near a hospital.
Okay, Joel, I want you to get to your answer. I've got some researching to do right now on Seth's answer, actually. But
so, okay. Are you going to be paying attention to my answer, chap?
Yes, I am paying attention.
Okay. So, can you repeat the name of the sport for me and then use it in a sentence?
Cheese rolling. So
I like to play cheese.
The cheese
rolling.
Is rolling down the hill and people are chasing after it.
Wait, is that the sport? Is that the game?
I used it in a sentence, Seth.
Okay, so the great thing about cheese rolling is it so early 1900s, you know, times were not that great. Like, if we're just being honest, wasn't the best of times. Wasn't the worst of times, but it wasn't the best of times. And in a hobbit hole, there lived this little guy.
Frodo.
No. But anyway, he was really bored. Both his parents were working full time, and he just didn't know what to do with himself.
Are we sure it's not Frodo?
And so he got his neighborhood kids. Might have been Frodo, actually, now that you're saying this. Because one thing that multiple journalists noted was his ridiculously hairy feet. So a lot of people actually think that this story is where Tolkien got some of his inspiration. I don't hold that to be true personally, but, you know, to each his own. So anyway, his parents were both at work, and he got a couple of the neighborhood kids. Unfortunately, we do not have any of their names down at this time. And they stood at the top of the hill outside the neighborhood. And back then, cheeses were mainly packaged in these bigger rolls with sort of, not a tin foil, but sort of this plastic packaging just over the whole chunk, and then you would cut it to your size. It didn't come with all these pre-sliced things that you get today. And so you can still find those in the smaller cheese rolls. But anyway, he got one of those, and he rolled it down the hill, and whoever could get to it before it got to the bottom of the hill got to take the cheese thing home. And so, unfortunately, one of his neighbors, we still don't know their name, he ran to the bottom. He jumped in front of it before it got to the bottom, and he got to take it home. What this young man did not know is that when his parents got home, he was beat severely because this was supposed to be their meal for the next week. And so at its worst, this sport is responsible for the abuse of children, which is not a joke. I do not appreciate whoever just laughed into the mic. But at its very best, I mean, it just created this world of acceptance. In the time of hardship, in the time where you didn't know when your parents were coming home, you could just have a good time with your friends. And so the beauty of this sport is it is up to interpretation. Since then, man, I want to say, I think we just had a big anniversary for this sport.
Yeah, it was the 100th year.
I think.
Like 3 weeks ago, right?
I think it was this summer, right, near the end of the summer, maybe. But there was a big anniversary for it. And so, anyway, the beauty of it, what I was going to say about Seth's, even though his answer was a little strange, is that there is a beauty to the sport because it's kind of up to you, which isn't to say it can be whatever it wants, but as long as it's derived. So, for instance, one Christmas in 2010, I think, it had finally snowed a lot. And so me and my family were trying to make a snowman. And it just wasn't, the snow wasn't packing right. The snowman, it wasn't being made the way we wanted it to.
So you used cheese?
So, yes, we went out and we bought a lot of cheese and we started rolling that up and we made a cheese snowman. And my father looks at me. I remember he looked at me right after we fit the little carrot in the cheese face. And he goes, "Did we just play cheese rolling?" And I said, "Father, I think we did." And then we split the snowman. And so I guess what I'm saying is, if that's what cheese rolling is to you, Seth, then that's what cheese rolling is to you. And I just want to appreciate the sport for cultivating a sense of creativity in my own life. And I know that that's not what it was meant to be. I know that probably that young man that rolled to the bottom of the hill and wished so very dearly that he could have caught that cheese, I know he's probably rolling in his grave right now as he hears you speaking of what you think cheese rolling is. But you know what? That's okay, because he's gone now and we're still here.
Wow, Joel, that was just a beautiful answer. You had all of the intricacies of the sport exactly right. Seth's sport actually is rolling cheese. I just researched it. Yeah, it was derived from cheese rolling.
Okay.
But it was actually the bullies at the school that kid went to. They made fun of him. Johnson High. They made fun of him for his cheese rolling or rolling cheese exploits. So they made another game where they dressed up in Speedos and covered themselves in mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah, and
another half point cheese. For Seth.
Yeah, so Joel has to get the point there, actually, because that story was so beautiful. I'm going to have to just give him 10 points. So Joel did award Seth 3 half points in that
segment.
That's
a point and a half.
Yeah, so for you, Joel wins 17 to 2.5. So, Joel, I can't tell you how much of an honor it was to have such a sports expert on the show today.
No, yeah, chap. I have to say, it's been a real honor for me to even just talking in this last 20 minutes or so. Because here's the thing about being so brilliant, and this is something that I tell my students all the time, is sometimes you just forget how much you know. And so to just talk about things, to be asked about sports, I mean, it just really helps me, dig through the recesses of my brain files and just kind of uncover. Because sports is such a beautiful thing. And something that I always say is that if you really believe, you can find sports anywhere and everywhere. In Skip Bayless yelling, in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. I mean, it's just everywhere, chap. And so I just want to appreciate sports in general. And I want to thank you for having me out here. And Seth, I would just encourage you, man, don't lose hope. Like, sports will be around from years to come, so you have time to understand it. And I know it's hard to grasp your mind around and things like this, but sports will always be there. And sports will be something that maybe your kids will understand more than you do right now. And that's fine. It's not for everybody, but it's always there for you if you want it.
I'm going to fart on your pillow and give you pink eye.
Wow. Seth, I'm taking away your 2.5 points.
That's
for that.
Fine.
Joel just reached out to you in the most beautiful way I've ever seen, and you want to fart on his pillow.
And give him pink eye.
Wow.
You know, the interesting thing, chap, we all know that recently.
Here's the thing. If I fart on his pillow and I get a pink eye, then some of my bacteria gets in him, and we become closer through that process.
Joel, what were you saying?
It's a bonding moment.
I was just going to say that we know now in the NFL, after touchdowns, things of this nature, celebration is, you know, it's allowed. You can be a little bit extra now at the end of the point.
Right.
And so my hope in that was that people would be a little more gracious in what they would do now that they're allowed to do it. And unfortunately, there's just been other extra outbursts and things of this nature. And so tying that back into Seth is that even though I reached out to him, even though I'm saying you're allowed to be a little ugly, the fact that he was even more ugly should not surprise us. We can't legislate good character. We can't legislate friendly atmosphere. All we can do is strive to create that every day that we come out into the field and every day that we commentate on these games. And I mean, at the end of the day, that's all we can do. I can't expect Seth to be as, you know, kind as I've been during this interview, but I can, you know, I can hope for the best for him.
I appreciate it, Joel. I think that was the best episode we've had yet, guys. Seth will not be joining us next semester because he has been kicked off of the show for his rude comments towards Joel Holland.
That's not true.
Joel will be replacing Seth as my co-host with Nick Velasquez. Yeah.
Listen, chap, and it's nothing against you. It's definitely nothing against Seth, but I don't think I'll be returning on this show at any time in the near future.
Oh, man. I guess we're stuck with Seth then.
I guess you are.
Wow.
Screw Vandy.
All right, that's a wrap, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Just remember to stay thirsty, my dudes, and we'll catch you on the flippity-flop. Toodles.